Hi, this is Chris Peterson, host of the Penny Forward podcast. The Penny Forward podcast is completely produced by blind-owned businesses, including Taylor's Accessibility Services. Find her web hosting services and accessibility consulting services at taylorarnt.com. That's TAYLORARND.com. Also, we appreciate you listening to the Penny Forward podcast. If you appreciate us, we hope you'll consider providing a small donation to our tip jar to make this podcast possible. It only costs a small amount per episode to produce the Penny Forward podcast, and your assistance will be greatly appreciated. Again, thank you for being a Penny Forward podcast listener. Welcome to the Penny Forward podcast. Penny Forward is a community of people who are blind, their families, and friends who share an interest in financial independence. Join us now as we meet people like us who are working towards their own success. My guest today is Joshua the Jedi Loya. Some of you may be familiar with him. He left a reliable job and safe living at age 36 to become a professional adventurer. He's a blind surfer. He ranks in 7 different martial arts. He's a stand-up comedian and host of the Adventure Mind podcast. And there's probably much more that I'm forgetting right now, but he can tell you all about that when he starts talking. Josh, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I'm happy to be here.
So tell us about yourself.
Beyond what you just did, I really enjoy all the nuance of life. Like the podcast is emblematic of my life philosophy in that we don't get any time back, right? We can always get, theoretically anyway, we can always get more money. We can always have more food or work out harder or this or that. But in terms of life, we can't get any time back. And so living each moment intentionally, even if that's just sitting and enjoying the quiet of the moment, I think that doing things on purpose, we get to actually like, hey, you know, instead of just having this soda and just not even thinking about it, let me enjoy the sweetness of it. Let me enjoy the little sizzle of the carbonation in my mouth and things like that. So it can be something like that. And I'm a big fan of doing things on purpose. I'm also a big fan of doing really difficult and scary things on purpose, because then you find out things about yourself you didn't realize that you knew. And I think that's really neat, kind of just peeling back the layers of not just our interactions with other people, but also our awareness of our own, you know, what makes us. There's this thing where it's a concept in the art of war, right? It's a real, you know, famous, you know, a lot of people in business use it. And obviously my background in martial arts, but one of the things they talk about is know your enemy. But you also, I think, extrapolating that out, I think you need to know yourself. And if you are willing to look at with courage, right? Because sometimes what we find, we're not sure what we want to find, but if we kind of put ourselves in different experiences to see what we're made of, we actually might be more pleasantly surprised than disappointed. I think a lot of people don't do that because they're afraid of what they find. And I think you might be pleasantly surprised how much stronger you are, speaking to the collective you, not necessarily you individually.
So tell me, did you come to this realization over time, or have you always felt this way?
I've always been interested in adventuring things. Like when I could still see, I wasn't really allowed to do a lot of adventuring things like skateboarding and, you know, surfing and all the things that I really enjoy. That was always part of it. I'm a huge fantasy and comic book fiction nerd. I mean, I love all the Marvel and DC stuff. My favorite genre to read long form fiction is fantasy. And I, you know, love Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that. So the whole idea of adventuring and crafting a story, that's always been there. But it really wasn't until about the time that I started cross training in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and then got to the point where it was kind of growing beneath the surface. Just before I quit my job. But as I quit my job, somewhat the impetus behind that and just continuing on is that growing awareness that when I did difficult things, I felt better. You know, I've done a bunch of different martial arts. The scariest one I've ever done, honestly, is judo, because, and I had gosh, probably over 10 years of martial arts experience before I actually did judo. And it was scary to me because I didn't want to be thrown and not know when the ground was coming. And I know there's probably people in your audience that actually have done judo, but confronting my fear, doing something that scared the absolute like crap out of me, forced me to kind of confront that. And it sort of unlocked something in me where I actually enjoyed the thriving of kind of doing something scary and realizing, oh, I'm okay on the other side of this. And I think that there's been something lost in, I don't think this is exclusive to the blind and visually impaired community, but I think people with disabilities, this definitely comes up where the world wants to coddle us and make things extra safe. And there's a difference between accommodation, you know, because obviously, you know, I'm not going to be able to read a print letter that's sent to me in the mail, but I can do something that people would think a blind person can't do. You know, I'm not the only person who's blind that surfs. I wish there were more, actually. So if anybody's out there and they want to let me know, but I think that as I began to do more difficult things, it sort of reinforced the, oh, wow, I can do that. And it changes the appreciation of the simple things. Like, for instance, when I went skydiving years ago, hearing birds beneath my feet. When I caught a wave for the very first time, you know, my friend and I went out for a beer after we were done surfing. And that was, could not tell you for the life of me what beer it was, but it was the tastiest beer I ever had. When you contrast the really intense, challenging things, and then it makes the celebration, the victory, that much more easily enjoyed, I think.
We'll continue our interview in a moment, but first.
Hey, this is Byron Lee from Super Blink, and I'm on vacation right now. But even during my time of rest, I'm working on podcasts for you. If you want to have sound effects, music, or random text messages show up in your podcast. All right, we'll just edit that out and fix it in post. Do you have a podcast, a radio station, or some other audio project and want that personal touch? Check out superblink.org. God.
Mute your phone!
See? Oh my god, the damn dog!
Hi, this is Chris Peterson from Penny Forward. Visit superblink.org. Maybe they can help you.
Do you have a favorite budgeting, banking, or investing app? Tell us about it at 952-856-0313. If you missed that number, you can always find it at pennyforward.com/podcast.
I'm sure that some listeners are kind of wondering because there's a huge unemployment rate in the blind community.
Sure.
You had a job, and I'm curious to know what it took to get that job and then what it took to leave it when you were ready to do that.
When it came to, because I was working as the access technology specialist for the Braille Institute location in San Diego. I don't have any problem talking about specifically what I did. Some people are a little bit hush-hush about that, but you know, I had volunteered off and on with the Braille Institute. I had actually even worked for them for a short period of time, and I'd even had a paid internship at one point. And there are some people that are better with technology than I am. I'm okay, but I'm really good at communicating things in a way that doesn't make people feel stupid, allows people to kind of not be anxious about what they're learning and just focus on what it is that I have to teach them. And because I was a known quantity to the people that were hiring me. And I was actually, it didn't hurt that I was friends with the outgoing AT specialist they had there. And I had actually worked in that capacity briefly. But when it really came down to it is they knew who I was. They didn't have to wonder, oh, can he do this job? They already knew I could do that job because I'd done that in a volunteer capacity. And I was able to communicate that to them, not just in my CV, but also like I had done events with them and they, you know, they were aware. So sometimes it's about setting yourself apart, not just from the applicants in terms of your skills, but also making sure that sometimes, and obviously not everybody has this, but if you can set yourself apart from the candidates and already be known to the people that are hiring you, whether just from networking or whether they're aware of work you did or whatever, that really helps. So I think the fact that they knew what I was about, that made a difference. When it came time to leaving the job, and this is, I'm going to say something kind of controversial, because, you know, blind people were supposed to be very accepting of the lot we're given. You know, aren't really supposed to rock boats, you know. But the reality is quite frankly, there was not a lot of respect, I think, for blind and visually impaired people by the organization as a whole. Not the people that were, you know, on the ground with me teaching classes at the center. You know, all those people were awesome. But the reality is that between me and the counselor they had on staff when I worked there, we saw more people combined, more people individually than any other staff member. And in fact, the rest of the staff members besides us combined. And yet they were becoming more restrictive with overtime and how many hours and things like that. And that's okay. I get it's a budget. But really when it came down to it is we were... the only people that were actually making the organization better and effective in the local San Diego area. And there were several, or at least two positions that I was going to apply for, and you needed a driver's license. And I found that kind of amusing. And I probably could have fought it if I wanted to, but I really just didn't get the impression that Braille Institute as an institution, not the individual centers, but the leadership at the very, very top did not respect the real deep in the trenches contributions that its staff members were making. And honestly, too, right? Like if you're working for a nonprofit, there's only so it was great experience, don't get me wrong, but they're not going to pay you the big bucks like another organization would, like if I worked for Apple or if I worked for Amazon or whoever. And I knew that I was doing good work, but I was stressed out constantly because I was being asked to do much more than I had the resources to do. And honestly, as much as I really believe that technology can leverage, be a huge tool to leverage towards upward mobility for visually impaired people and for people in general, but especially for the people that I was working with, I wasn't passionate about it. And I'm not, beyond just what it does for me. And my real passion has been for a long time. I've been doing martial arts since 2005. I really wanted to do it professionally. I wanted to do something with it. And I literally was not sleeping. I was training in the morning. I was working all day. I was teaching and training at night, and I was exhausted and I was stressed out and I didn't feel valued. And my wife, who thankfully we don't have any children, not to knock anybody who has children, but because we didn't have children, she could sign up for the uncertainty. And she will tell you that she likes me better after I have left. Not because I was a horrible person, but she saw the toll that it was taking on me to try to do two things. Because I think with AT work in particular, they don't pay access technology people enough. And the problem is too, is I ended up very understandably teaching people a lot of remedial things. But then I had no time to actually stay sharp on the new things. And it was just it became a very exhausting prospect. And I wanted to do something where I felt good about the work I was doing. And I felt good about the person I was. And the reality, the real nitty gritty besides, is I evaluated my finances. When I left my job, I still had the safety net of disability benefits. I still had the safety net of rental assistance. And when it got right down to it, there was an opportunity cost, of course, but because of the way things broke down, I wasn't really ahead that much per month, more than a few hundred dollars. Now, a few hundred dollars makes a difference, but if I'm going to work my butt off for only a few hundred dollars extra after you take away all the safety nets, you know, I was willing to gamble and actually do something that made me feel good. And that's really what it came down to for me personally. Some people might make a different choice because they have children to watch out for. And obviously kids can't sign up for uncertainty. You know, adult spouses can.
So talk about the uncertainty a little bit. What is involved then, as you just said, you were able to get on SSDI and have some income from that. What is the uncertainty that you're dealing with the kind of lifestyle you're living now?
Sure. So it's, I don't get a salary, right? Like I get the baseline benefits, but I still have to raise funds for surf competitions. I mean, I have a surf competition coming up next month as of this recording. And originally it was scheduled for Oceanside, which is San Diego County. If it had been in Oceanside, I would have been able to sleep in my own bed. Well, I have to go compete in a surf contest and it's now in Huntington Beach that requires a hotel now. So I have to take the initiative to apply for grants, to fundraise. I'm working towards gaining some commercial sponsorships so that I don't have to stress out on that as much. But you know, the reality is because it's not a salary thing, I have to go out and seek that funding for those things. I have a handful of martial arts students that I'm still working with, not as much right now, obviously because of the pandemic, but essentially I'm working with a family where they're all related, you know, it's pretty closed pod. But it's the fact that I can't, beyond just the baseline of whatever benefits that I qualify for at the given time, we just had a student that had to drop out. So that's another $80 to $100 less per month because we kind of work with students because they have other family and whatnot training with us. So it's the, we're going to be okay. I don't know how much we're going to have next month. We can project we're probably going to have this month, but I don't know if I'm going to have a surprise expense. Like, okay, I got to lay down another $200 for accommodations on top of the competition expense. And, you know, thankfully I'm getting a partial sponsorship for the contest, but it doesn't cover everything. So as far as it's more of the unreliability, and that's taken me an effort to kind of scale back and not, you know, I used to get really nervous about money, but I mean, I still do, I guess, if it's desperate enough, but it is really nice though, because there's the uncertainty on the one side. There's also the uncertainty, you know, that because there's some flexibility in it, that, you know, if I know that I worked out way too hard Sunday, I had maybe a marathon surf session. If I need to take it easy Monday morning, then I can do that. If I work for somebody else, then I can't, I don't have that flexibility.
We'll continue our interview in a moment, but first,
let's take a moment to talk about risk. In the financial world, risks are all over the place. Really, risks are all over the place? Everywhere. But sometimes it can be hard to understand what kind of risks exist in the financial world. For example, would you believe that there is risk in doing nothing? You can put your money into a savings account that earns very little interest, and you risk losing money. Why? Because of a concept called inflation. You've probably noticed that prices of things that you're used to buying go up over time. This phenomenon is called inflation, and the effect it has on your money is that $500 today is not going to buy as much as $500 10 years from now. So putting your money into a savings account that earns very little interest and not growing that money means that it won't be worth as much as it was when you put it away. There is also risk in investing your money in the stock market. The stock market goes up and the stock market goes down, and this means that the money that you've invested can be worth a lot more than it was when you invested it, but it can also be worth a little less than it was when you invested it. These fluctuations are how people make money in the stock market, but if you get too nervous and you sell at the wrong time, you can also lose money. So think about the kinds of risks that you are comfortable with and use that comfort level to help you make your financial decisions.
Do you have a short success story you want to share on the air? Leave us a message at 952-856-0313. If you missed that number, you can always find us at pennyforward.com/podcast.
I want to leave us time to talk about the fun stuff because you do a lot of fun stuff.
Sure.
But it is a financial podcast and you're talking about things that are of interest to our listeners. Talk about finding sponsorships and writing applications for grants and stuff. How do you go about do that? How did you know how to go about doing that?
And that's still a learning process for me, quite honestly. So if I'm being real, real honest, learning to apply for grants is a new skill. But I had very fortuitously met somebody who was also being sponsored by an organization called Challenge Athletes Foundation. They are my go-to. They don't cover everything, but they cover usually a good $1,000 to $1,500 of my expenses every month, every year. Not every month, I wish, but it's enough to cover basic registrations, maybe some training costs, that kind of thing. And I just happen to know that it exists. And then they're a local organization. They take grant applications once a year, and that's one. And then as I became more connected to largely the adaptive surf community, they're telling me about organizations like High Five Foundation, and other people are telling me about United States Association of Blind Athletes. So if people are visually impaired and they want to pursue athletics, you can connect with USABA. And it's not a clean thing. You're going to have to educate yourself, because there might be things you qualify for that I don't, based on maybe ethnic origin. But it really comes down to is be willing to do the research, talk to people, network with people. The reason that I have the sponsorship for this contest coming up is because of connections I made in the adaptive surf community. So AmpSurf is another adaptive surf organization. They're covering the costs of all adaptive athletes. This is a mainstream contest, but I wouldn't know they existed if I didn't plug myself in. And so part of finding those sponsorships, I had a network sponsorship with a technology company that I can't mention now because I don't have a relationship with them anymore. But they covered a couple of my surf contests. And it's because I just went out of my way to be real and build rapport with people, and then be okay if people said no. This is the real key thing. Whether you're talking sales, whether you're talking seeking funding for a project, for a startup, or athlete sponsorship, or whatever the case may be, you have to be okay whether somebody says yes or no. And that's so vital, because if somebody says no, it doesn't mean that you aren't worth sponsoring. It doesn't mean that your idea is garbage. It doesn't mean that because Damon John doesn't want to, and the other sharks in the Shark Tank don't want to sponsor you, doesn't mean your idea is no good. But you need to develop that thick skin and be able to tolerate rejection, because otherwise, whether you're applying for a job or anything else, you're just, you know, you're not always going to get the answer you want, and you have to be willing. But sometimes if you let the fear of the rejection stop you from asking, you're not going to hear yes either.
That's very profound and very, very true. Okay, let's have some fun.
All right.
Because I want to hear about blind surfing. How does a blind person surf? I've never heard of this before.
All right. So I will have somebody with me in the water. They're not allowed to touch my board or have any physical contact with me. Certainly competition rules. I mean, obviously, if you're hanging out with your buddies, you know, you feel free to fudge it. But they will. And the guy that I work with, John White from Waves for All, amazing guy. He will kind of give me an indication as to how the wave conditions are as we're kind of, you know, waiting out. Once I'm on my board and I'm paddling out, he'll kind of give me a heads up like, okay, you got a roller coming in 3, 2, 1. So that means that maybe I'm going to have to paddle over the top of it. If it's real big, maybe I'm going to have to dive under it. We have a communication strategy. When we're out there in the water and we get past the outside break, because surfing usually have a beachside break where it's kind of real foamy and crumbly, and then you get further out where the bigger waves are. When I'm on the outside, he will call. It's like, hey, you got a wave coming. You can start paddling. Oh, you want to turn 20 degrees to your left. Right, when you catch it, it's going to be a left. So that's going to indicate whether because the waves don't break straight on. They break either north or south, or depending on the coastline. But that once I'm actually on the wave itself, then it's really all about, I can still hear him a little bit, but the further I get away, it really has to be based on what I feel through my feet. Maybe I'm low enough, I can touch the face of the wave with my fingers, but it's also about hearing the roar of the wave and knowing, you know, what's necessary to kind of turn away from it so I can extend that ride out. And it's really something you learn by experience. Right. So, but you typically, when you first start out, and definitely in competition, just because you only have so much time, you'll have somebody giving you verbal feedback the whole time. You're not out there just floundering by yourself and like, oh, I hope I catch a wave and a shark doesn't eat me. It's a little more controlled than that, but it is really fun. Honestly, once you know that you're not going to drown, wipeouts actually become really fun because then you're like, I can't worry about this. I just have to wait until I come back up from getting knocked off my board. And it's sort of the need to let go actually becomes the fun part. And then that's where you get to have, you know, your little adventures and you get to see like, or hear dolphins, you know, kind of jumping out of the water, like near your board. And that's always a really neat thing. There was an orca. I was out this morning and there was a little baby orca that was out there and I didn't see him, but I could hear him kind of expelling water out of his blowhole. And, you know, my friend John, who was out there with me, kind of gave me a heads up that he was out there. It was really beautiful.
So for those who aren't familiar with surfing at all and don't know exactly mm-hmm. how it works, and I would be one of these because I live in the middle of the country.
Okay, fair.
How does this work?
So essentially you have, you know, water will kind of come in to shore and it'll kind of go back out. There's usually a big like kind of build up on the wave, and your goal as a surfer is to match that wave. So it'll come, and the reason you paddle back in towards shore is you're trying to match the speed of your board at some point down the way to where the wave will kind of crest and build up just as it hits your board. Or, you know, at some point that, or you're kind of maintain that speed and that power while it hits your board. And then your goal or your what you're reaching for is to stand up if you or have the ability to stand. There are surfers who don't have the use of their legs as well, but to stand up on that board. And then at that point, then you're actually working in conjunction with the wave to, you know, ride on top of the water on that board. So that you're not actually in the water so much once you're actually surfing and you're enjoying the basically the power of the wave, the power of the ocean is actually moving you towards shore or downshore, depending on the angle of the wave.
Wow. And is it noisy?
It can be for sure. But when you get out, that's it's really fascinating too. Like it can be very noisy, especially if you're in what they call the impact zone, where you're kind of in between the outside waves and the waves before they reform on the shore. It can be really noisy. Definitely there can be a lot of wind, which makes for challenging conditions, but it can also be really calm too, right? So once you get out past the outside break, there are moments of noise and moments of kind of a little bit of serenity too.
Let's switch gears then and talk a little bit about martial arts.
I think everybody can train in martial arts. Now, what it will take for someone to train is very different. Obviously, if somebody has more serious health concerns, you modify the training. The thing that's really valuable for me is the fact, especially because I have a particular love for grappling-based martial arts, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, and things like that, specifically Brazilian jiu-jitsu for me, although I do train in a couple other things, is the fact that it's all tactile. It's very... nobody has to be easy on me because I'm blind. I was just in a no-gi jiu-jitsu class today. Basically, I'm not wearing a uniform, just basically a t-shirt or rash guard and shorts. But, you know, the guy that was trying to get the choke on me, he wasn't going easy because I was blind. He was trying to get the choke because if he didn't, I was going to get out of it and I was going to footlock him. And I think that there's something really powerful about, again, I talked about before, people want to coddle people with disabilities, and then being able to be unleashed to go do something hard and basically be expected to do just as well as somebody, regardless of whether or not the fact they can see, that's exciting for me. And then of course, obviously there's the self-defense aspect and all of that, but it's more so the therapeutic aspect of martial arts, I think, is just doing something that's really difficult where your blindness doesn't give you an excuse to have lowered standards. I think that's garbage. I think we need to be just as strong. Accommodations, yes, but we need to challenge ourselves so that people can't just go, oh, well, they can't do it, they're blind, or they can't do it, they have this disability. Being able to do martial arts where people are expecting, like, if I don't move, somebody's going to choke me, somebody's getting me in a footlock. And that's exciting to me because I have every opportunity to be as successful as they are.
We'll get back to our interview in just a moment, but first.
Do you know the difference between a checking and savings account? When you're in an unfamiliar financial environment and need a hand understanding the lay of the land, Penny Forward is here to help. We provide affordable one-on-one and group financial education programs that give you the confidence to get out there and achieve your goals. Visit pennyforward.com to learn more about who we are and what we do.
Do you have a short success story that you would like to share on the air? Leave us a message at 952-856-0313. If you missed that number, you can always find it at pennyforward.com/podcast.
Real quick, before we run out of time, talk absolutely about some of the other stuff you do, the podcast, the stand-up comedy, all that stuff.
For sure. So I started doing stand-up in 2016 when I tore my hamstring. I couldn't walk for like a week, and it was probably a good couple months before I was able to go back into full training. And I wanted to do something with consequence. And so I got up and started telling sometimes embarrassing stories in front of strangers. And turns out they liked what I had to say. And so I kept doing it and I had fun doing it. And I haven't been on stage since February of last year for obvious reasons. And so I started the podcast mostly as a creative outlet. Adventure Mind is the podcast. So just the word adventure and mind, like your brain. And originally it was sort of an outlet because I couldn't get on stage, but I liked having in-depth conversations with people and just being able to have a real conversation. And so I've had everything from, I had Tiffany Timebaum Van Soest, who's the current women's bantamweight glory world kickboxing champion. I had Chuck Liddell, who is he's trained several UFC champions, Ramzi Najim. He's trained Tim Kennedy and or Chuck Liddell, who's probably the most famous of the people he's trained. But I've also had Adaptive Surfers on. I've had other comedians on. The most recent episode has Nicole Sanzarella, who did the audio description read for The Mandalorian, which was really, really cool. I think that finding ways that I get to just enjoy life on purpose, right? The podcast is about that. This, even just doing this conversation with you, is about that, because, you know, at the end of the day, like we don't get the time back, and we might as well enjoy what we have as deeply while we have it. Specifically with the stand-up, I love the fact that I get to kind of break down people's preconceptions about what being blind is, and you know, people confuse my disability. Like I cannot even tell you, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, potentially, how many people want to use sign language and are flabbergasted when that doesn't work. Like that, like when my girlfriend at the time was a sign language interpreter. Okay, I get that. That confused people, but like I will have people, you know, they yell at me, and then there's a way to kind of bring those types of experiences. And I don't just talk about blind stuff, but on stage and in the podcast, things like that, it allows me to be a little bit of a window in a comedic sense where people don't have to worry about offending me, because like I'm already making fun of it myself. And then it can really open up a dialogue, which is kind of neat.
I think that's really key. Where can people find out more about you and find your podcast and so forth?
So if you go to adventuremind.net, so just the word adventure, A-D-V-E-N-T-U-R-E. Wow, I said that right. How about that? Mind, M-I-N-D.net. You'll find the podcast. Right now, if you go to joshwithajedi.com, it goes to a somewhat defunct website, but hopefully by the time of this release, it'll point to a page on the Adventure Mind website. But I'd say Adventure Mind, that's probably the best way. You can find that all through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, whatever podcatching client you want to use. And then I hate Instagram. I really, really do, but I'm there. Joshua the Jedi, Servant Warrior on Twitter. And, you know, if you Google Joshua Lowe, Blind Surfer, you'll find me. And if you send me a smoke signal on the right day, then I might get that too.
Yeah, it's true. That's how I found them. So,
those homing pigeons didn't work out so well. I know we should have worked on
that. No, but you know, you got to try stuff. Yeah. You never know until you try.
True.
Certain things that, you know, in investing, we talk about diversification. So if you do the smoke signals and the homing pigeons,
hey,
one or the other.
Both and the smoke signals got to me. So
yeah, one or the other is going to work and then it's going to pay off. That's really how it works.
Yeah.
Josh, it's been really fun. Thanks for being
right
here.
On.
And I hope we can have you on again sometime again.
All right. Hey, thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Josh. That concludes this episode of the Penny Forward podcast. Penny Forward is a community of people who are blind, their families, and friends who share an interest in financial independence. Join us and we will work together to avoid financial obstacles and target our goals. To learn more, visit www.pennyforward.com. Until next time, I'm Chris Peterson. Thanks for listening.